The 418-foot ferry Columbia is docked at Ketchikan's Vigor, Alaska shipyard while undergoing repairs to its propeller system. That's not great for ferry passengers who've been sailing on the smaller Malaspina instead, but it worked out for a team of scientists who installed a seawater monitoring system on the Columbia before the ferry is due to resume service. Wiley Evans is a researcher with the Canadian Hackeye Institute and is the technical lead in the program. Tucked under some stairs in a corner of the Columbia's car deck, he shows me the newly installed equipment.
Yeah, so there's an inverted cup in there that sits over the drain, so we don't have air that comes up through the drain.
Evans says getting to this point took about 3 years.
Allison Bidlock from Alaska Coastal Rainforest Center and I started talking about this in about 2014. In 2015, we did a similar installation on another passenger vessel that was a glacier tour vessel that operated out of Whittier.
That was a small catamaran.
At the time, I felt it was fairly difficult, but now, having been through this installation, that was pretty easy. So,
what was it about this that made it harder? Is it just the size of the ship?
Yes, the size of the ship, the fact that it's a ferry, and they're much more, they're very cautious about, you know, seawater flowing through the vessel and how it's moving around the vessel.
The seawater lines had to be engineered and installed. Through those lines, seawater enters the system at the bow thruster cavity and is pumped up to the equipment on the car deck.
Yeah, so the water first flows through an oxygen sensor and then through a thermoselenograph, which measures the temperature and the salinity of the water. And then into these boxes here, these larger boxes. The first is the wet box. Water goes into the wet box and is equilibrated with air.
In other words, ocean water is sucked up while the ship is underway and then is measured for oxygen, temperature, and salinity. That's how much salt it contains. Then it's pumped into the wet box where it's sprayed into a little container. Air in that container picks up carbon dioxide contained in the water. That air is then pumped into a dry box, which analyzes CO2 levels. Separate sensors measure carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere to compare that with the seawater.
What we're after is trying to understand the time and space patterns in surface ocean CO2 chemistry near shore. And in this area, it's extremely data poor.
Evans says they hope to discover patterns of CO2 concentrations along the entire Southeast Alaska and British Columbia coastline, and the ferry is the perfect platform for gathering data.
You know, the fantastic thing about this vessel is it's going from Bellingham to Skagway and back every week, and so that's a 1,600-kilometer run, and nowhere in the world is there a ferry system that's outfitted with CO2 sensors that is running that scale of a transit. So this is really exciting.
Evans says they expect to see seasonal changes in carbon dioxide related to temperature, changes related to freshwater sources such as glacier melt and stream outfalls, and changes connected to areas of large development.
So it'll be a mosaic of different signals that we're seeing along the transit, and really fun to analyze from my standpoint.
Evans hopes the study can continue at least 5 years, but he'd really prefer it to last closer to a decade.
The challenge is really first understanding what the natural variability looks like in this really data-poor region, and then making measurements long enough that we can tease out the long-term actual ocean acidification trend, which is this gradual increase through time. It's really hard to see with just 1 or 2 years of data.
Evan says the data will help fisheries management, especially oyster farmers. In Ketchikan, for example, a small local study has given area oyster farmers a better idea of when to put animals in the water.
Because we've been able to define sort of the seasonal window of opportune growth conditions that sort of starts around March or April and ends right about now.
Crab also are affected by ocean acidification. Evan says it's not yet clear how much it affects other fisheries.
But we're still trying to work out, you know, what the links are and who exactly the winners and losers are going to be. And it's really clear that shellfish are on the losing side.
The monitoring equipment will run continuously and automatically, so nobody needs to be there watching it. Evan says they do plan on 1 or 2 ride-alongs per year to make sure everything's working correctly. The data will be available daily, though, through an antenna on the bow. It will upload automatically to a website available through the Alaska Ocean Acidification Network site. Evan says they're designing it so that non-scientists can understand the data. Christy Harrington is an environmental specialist with the Alaska Marine Highway System. She says ferry system officials were happy to work with the science team.
It'll be the biggest survey that was taking place along in North America from Bellingham to Skagway. And the route that the ferry takes is very close to shore compared to some of the other units that were on board other vessels. So it'll give them a lot more data that they can acquire and use. We're just very excited to be able to provide the resource for the oceanographic equipment to be on board.
Evan says the study wouldn't be possible without partners like the ferry system. He also mentioned the Canada-based Tula Foundation, the Alaska Ocean Observing System, Alaska Coastal Rainforest Association, University of Alaska Southeast, and NOAA.
One of my colleagues from NOAA, who's sort of the brains behind this equipment, Jeff LeBon, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this without their support either. So,
all those partners eagerly await the first data. The Columbia is currently scheduled to resume its regular run in late October. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.